Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Well, Hurricane Charley in Florida has winds of 145 miles per hour, and it was upgraded at landfall at the time it hit the Florida coast to a Class 5 storm. That's 5 of 5. In a moment, we will have a live report from Bob Enyart Live's very own Joe Scott, who is in Florida, on the coast, right where the eye of the hurricane is also about to come to shore. But first, I just got to tell you about Maranatha Christian Center in Arvada, the very best school I have ever seen in my 30 years as a Christian. Over 100 people on staff, Christ-centered, top academics, affordable, and all of this for your kids, ages 2.5 years to 12th grade. Call Maranatha Christian Center at 303-431-5653. That's Maranatha, 431-5653. Hurricane Charley has come ashore in Florida, and we are going to Joe Scott. Joe, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
So tell us what's happening down there.
It is a mess. We have hurricane force winds where we have no electricity, so we don't know exactly how fast they're supposed to be, but it's knocking down trees and palm trees. All the power lines are down.
Well, the Weather Service has reported wind speeds of up to 145 miles an hour. Now, obviously, when it comes over land, those speeds could subside a bit. But so you are in Cape Coral?
Right, Cape Coral.
Where is that in relation to Fort Myers, Florida?
Oh, 30 minutes south of Fort Myers.
Okay, and the latest Weather Service map shows the eye of the hurricane just coming in right about where you guys are. So what's happened? You said power is out?
The power is out, the trees are down, power lines are down, and the water, we live right on the water on a canal, and it has raised above the seawall now, and it's coming up into the yard.
Hmm. So you said we live, now you and your husband, Ken and Joe Scott, you guys are known as Denver, well, leaders in the pro-life movement here in Denver, Colorado. What are you doing down in Florida?
I'm visiting my parents.
Okay, and Joe, why are you there? There were instructions given to evacuate the area?
A mandatory evacuation about 10 minutes before this started. The fire department was running up and down the streets. Because the storm took a turn and came headed right for us, but my parents won't leave.
Oh.
So we stay in, and I've got life jackets in the house. And
oh.
There's supposed to be a water surge at between 5 and 7 o'clock tonight. They say it can go from 5 feet to 10 feet, maybe even 17 feet high, 18 feet high.
Now, how high is the water now compared to... Let's see, it's just after 5 o'clock Eastern time there now, so high tide probably would be in by now. How high is the water now compared to a normal day?
It's 6 feet higher than it would normally be right now.
6 feet higher. Now, that that community it's a community, it's sort of like Venice, isn't it, where you guys are at?
Right.
Cape Coral?
That's right, Venice. Tons of canals. Everyone lives on a canal.
There are canals. Literally, every street is a canal.
Right.
There are canals everywhere through the community. And so there's a seawall there. So the water is, where's the water compared to the seawall?
Well, it's right on top of the seawall now, coming up into the yard.
Wow.
They said, right, the last thing we heard on the news is that the water can raise 5 to 10 feet in 2 minutes.
Wow.
When the winds change.
So it's at the top of the seawall,
right.
And your house is how high above the seawall?
We're 8 feet above sea level.
All right.
And so...
So if there's a surge, obviously it could reach your home.
Right. We're ready to be flooded.
All right. Well, Joe Scott, certainly we'll be praying for you guys to have wisdom. And if your parents had to be there, I'm glad you and your husband Ken are there to help them. So trees down everywhere, power lines down. How is your actual home with the winds and the yards doing?
Well, there's some trees down. The patio cover, it's called a cage. It's a big screen cage over a pool. That's being demolished. The actual frame is still up. All the screens are gone. Parts of the frame are down.
Wow.
We do have an awning type thing. It's a big metal thing that folds down and covers the whole side of the house and protects us from the wind. The only thing is, earlier it started to blow away, so we had to go out and batten that down on the patio. But
All right. How about neighbors' houses? Can you see what's going on?
Yeah, everybody's house looks pretty much intact. We have one neighbor whose roof is going. Taking off. They had solar panels on the roof, and the solar panels are lifting the roof.
So is it the shingles that are being lifted or the roof structure?
It's the shingles, not the structure. My sister lost her, she's four blocks away, and she's lost her patio cover. The hook, they had a roof on their patio. That's gone.
All right.
Well, everybody's pretty much built to withstand hurricanes here. It's the winds aren't as bad, I don't think, as the water's going to be. Mm.
Governor Neil Bush has said that this can be the tie for the costliest hurricane that Florida has experienced, perhaps $15 billion in damages.
Yeah.
So, Joe, we will be praying for you, and we'll, of course, want to keep in touch. So as long as power and phone, your power's out, but your phone's working.
The phone is working, but our power's out, and I have a cell phone in a waterproof container for later.
All right.
Okay,
so
right.
We'll be off the air later on this evening, but we will call you to make sure you guys are okay.
Thank you.
And we'll give people an update next week.
Thanks.
All right. God bless you. That's Joe Scott from Cape Coral, Florida. I'm looking right now at the National Weather Service, their latest map of the hurricane, and the eye of the hurricane is just due west of Fort Myers. And if you know that part of Florida at all, my family's from the East Coast, so we've vacationed in Florida. I've been there 15 times, I guess, and on the West Coast only a couple times. But going to the Everglades, Key West, it's all an exciting part of the country to see. But Cape Coral is just due west, a bit west and south of Fort Myers. And that's the city, that and Tampa, that have been mentioned most in the weather news reports over the last couple hours. So Ken and Joe Scott are right there. We appreciate that update. And please pray for them and for all those who live in Florida, that they use wisdom. That they would use wisdom and be safe. Okay, there's a new book out. The book is titled, it's about Bill Clinton. It's titled The Meaning of Is. The Meaning of Is, The Squandered Impeachment and Wasted Legacy of William Jefferson Clinton, written by former Congressman Bob Barr from Georgia. And Bob Barr, he played a significant role in the impeachment process. He introduced the initial inquiry of the impeachment of President Clinton to the House of Representatives. And I'd like to welcome Bob Barr to Bob and Yurt Live right now. Mr. Barr, thanks for joining us.
Oh, listen, it's a real pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. The title of your book is, it's a classic, The Meaning of Is.
Well, of course, it was a classic Bill Clintonism when he uttered it before the grand jury back in 1998, and it remains a classic of doublespeak today. I can't claim any credit for it. I have to give the devil the credit when it's due, and that is Bill Clinton himself.
Well, because you introduced the initial inquiry of impeachment to the House of Representatives, you've got insight into that part of our history that's unique, and I would love it. We'd appreciate the opportunity to hear from you about the impeachment. Why did it happen, and what do we derive from that part of our history? I was extremely discouraged at the time. We were on the air, and talking about what was happening, what was not being said. And so can you give us your version of events?
Well, it was, of course, an extremely important period in our nation's history, not at all pleasant. It's never pleasant, whether I, as a prosecutor, was prosecuting individuals or as a member of the House of Representatives, impeaching a president. It's not something that you want to have to do, but when the facts demand it, when history requires it, you take up your duty and you move forward. And I was very proud to do so as one of the impeachment managers over on the Senate side. The problem with the impeachment from the standpoint of actually not being able to remove Bill Clinton from office for his misdeeds, which he should have been in my opinion, was that, one, the Senate never wanted to deal with the impeachment at all. It pained them greatly to have these rowdy House members come over there and sort of upset their decorum with something as messy as an impeachment trial. Secondly, the leadership in the House, our Republican leadership in the House, decided, I think, ultimately, that they would rather leave Bill Clinton in office than remove him, simply for political reasons, to leave a weakened Bill Clinton in office rather than run the risk of a strengthened Al Gore. Mm. So the House never, leadership, that is, never really got behind the impeachment effort. And
well,
they
you...
waited so long into the fall of 1998 that by that time there was really no time at all left to move forward on the more substantive issues, the national security, the immigration law violations that I chronicle in my book, the campaign law violations, and so on and so forth.
Well, Bob Barr, remind us why exactly articles of impeachment were brought against Bill Clinton, and then I'd like to talk about a couple of the things that were not used in that prosecution.
The ultimate articles of impeachment on which he was impeached had to do with very serious offenses, perjury and obstruction of justice. It, of course, had nothing to do with his personal life. It had nothing to do with sex. It had everything to do with the rule of law. He perjured himself in a deposition. He perjured himself in his grand jury testimony, and he tried to get others to obstruct justice. So the charges that on which he was impeached were very serious. I don't think they were the most serious charges we could have and should have brought, but they were very serious. The reason the impeachment ultimately was able to go forward, even on those limited grounds,
right,
was not because of the Republican leadership in the House or the Republican leadership in the Senate, but the people of this country at the grassroots level decided that they had had enough and that they wanted standards to be set, and demanded by millions of faxes, phone calls, letters, postcards, and petitions to the Congress, forced the Congress to move forward.
Well, can I, from an amateur observer on the outside looking in at the events in Washington, one of the things that frustrated me was this. You know, the constant left-wing harangue that this was just about Clinton's private life, like you've already addressed. But it seems that Bill Clinton had a habit of getting sex from women, subordinates, and then giving them government jobs, offering them government jobs, which is the equivalent of paying for sex with tax dollars. And Monica Lewinsky, Jennifer Flowers, we could talk about these women, but Monica Lewinsky was offered a job at the Pentagon.
And he tried to buy her off. He tried to buy Kathleen Willey off. And, of course, he tried to buy Jennifer Flowers, too, but Paula Jones off. I mean, this was a pattern of behavior on the part of this man that went back to the earliest days of his public life in Arkansas.
So what we have done on the air, whenever we get, let's say, a Democrat or a liberal to call in and defend Bill Clinton that he should not have been impeached, we've boiled it down to that. That's one of our key talking points, is that no governing official should be allowed to remain in office when he's paying for sex with tax dollars.
Well, of course, he shouldn't be allowed to remain in office when he's paying for his personal gratification, whatever it is. There are laws against that.
Well,
and
right,
one perjures oneself in order to try and hide that fact. one certainly ought to be removed from office. Absolutely.
But could you let me know? It seems to me that that particular observation was not brought up in the impeachment and generally not leveled at him.
The only grounds on which we were able to get the leadership to move forward with the impeachment, despite efforts by myself and Judicial Watch, for example, and a number of others to move forward on other and more substantive grounds, the only basis on which the leadership was at all interested was simply and narrowly focused on the specific charges in the so-called Starr report, and that is simply on perjury and obstruction of justice.
Okay, the perjury, let's talk about that. And part of that revolved around the Monica Lewinsky issue. And also, did it also involve the Paula Jones and his perjury in a deposition regarding her case?
Yes, that was, of course, the genesis of the whole story episode was the sexual discrimination case against him that Paula Jones had brought and his perjury in that case.
Now, did Bill Clinton, do you recall from a bit of history, was Bill Clinton involved in any legislation that mandated when a woman makes an accusation against the man regarding some sexual behavior that his sexual past is relevant in the court proceedings? Do you recall a connection to that effect?
While he was president, he signed such legislation or legislation affecting those underlying federal statutes on sexual discrimination into federal law.
Exactly. So that it was Bill Clinton who said, and, you know, the feminists wanted this, and on principle, I think it's reasonable, that if a woman says that this man has assaulted me sexually or somehow treated me criminally sexually, then it's appropriate for the court to look at his sexual behavior to see if it's consistent with her claims. And Bill Clinton signed that into law, and then refusing to obey the law that he's imposed on the rest of the country, he lied under oath.
That's precisely it in a nutshell. And, of course, his lawyers, in their defense of him, both in court and then later before the House impeachment impeachment committee, of course, tried to argue, well, you have to put all of this in context. You have to look at what the president said in context. You have to look at what the president did in context, which means essentially what you just said, that the law applies to everybody else, but not if Bill Clinton violates it.
So you have to know what the meaning of the word is.
And, of course, you never will, because it means whatever the person saying it wants it to mean.
Right. When Bill Clinton said that, do you remember the immediate context of what caused him to utter? I remember as he was saying that sentence, watching it on TV, and I could tell where he was going with it. He very gradually seemed to slow up. He knew it was coming, but he couldn't stop himself. He just said it. Do you remember what it was that brought those words to his lips?
Well, it was in regard to both a specific question and a line of questioning about whether he had had sex with Monica Lewinsky.
Right. And it depends on what the meaning of the word is.
Exactly. And
now, okay.
The only thing I admire him for is for the ability to say that with a straight face.
Yeah, right. I have a question about things that didn't come up that perhaps some of the House managers wanted to introduce. I've got something I'd like to raise, but could you give me an example of things that you guys wanted to bring against Bill Clinton?
Well, we certainly wanted to go into the whole issue of Whitewater, in which he had used his office to prevent a legitimate investigation of loss of taxpayer monies as part of the Resolution Trust Corporation efforts to regain taxpayer monies lost as a result of fraud in the Madison Guarantee Trust.
Mm-hmm.
We also wanted to go into the whole issue of his violation of or misuse of taxpayer money to sell positions in government, such as the position that was given Charlie Tree, such as the selling of positions on U.S. trade missions abroad and so forth. We also a number of us wanted to go into a number of issues that had been raised by the House Government Reform Committee under Chairman Dan Burton's leadership that related to foreign money, including money from Communist China, coming into the White House to assist the Clinton-Gore reelection campaign effort in 1996.
Do you know if it's true? You mentioned Charlie Tree and foreign money that seemed to swirl around Bill Clinton from early in his political career. I have read, and my sources are not as reliable perhaps as yours, but I've read that there was foreign money in Bill Clinton's very first campaign for governor, well, even attorney general in Arkansas.
I believe you're correct, and I also have a distinct recollection from the investigations that we conducted, I think, on the Government Reform Committee, that Charlie Tree and some of those folks were very active in Arkansas politics during the entire time that Bill Clinton was in office or running for office in Arkansas.
And where was that money coming from?
At least later on, and I believe earlier on also, it was coming from Communist China.
So early on, Bill Clinton, he's a Rhodes Scholar. He's got ambition. He's married to a young Hillary Rodham from Chicago. And he's running for Attorney General of the state of Arkansas, not exactly a prime political post in American politics. And there's money from Communist China funding, helping to fund his campaign. And through his career.
It paints a pretty scary picture. I spent a number of years working at the CIA earlier in my adult life, and I swear that if one were to set out a casebook example of how a foreign power such as Communist China might tend to identify early on in their career a rising political star in this country, and befriend them and fund them so that they would be a source for that country later on.
To get influence.
To gain influence, this probably would be that textbook example of how you say it would be done.
Right. And when the liberals scream about, being unfaithful to Hillary, that's their personal affairs, it makes a man vulnerable. And he could be influenced by people threatening him. And also, when we look at the Arab world, and you remember Hollywood's movie Wag the Dog,
right,
where the American president was in the middle of a sex scandal, so he started a war to distract from the sex scandal. And here's a question I have for you. We've talked about this on the air. But of the Muslim population in the world, of those countries that tend to strongly dislike America, what percentage of those people think that Bill Clinton bombed Afghanistan and Sudan because of his own sex scandal?
I suspect it would be a very, very high percentage, as do most Americans who have looked objectively at what was going on at that particular time here in this country.
Yeah, I recall at the time hearing someone in the media, and I can't corroborate this, it was years ago, and heard it as I'm driving, but it sounded plausible that most reporters believe that Clinton did it for distracting from the Monica Lewinsky. There was something, in fact, going on that night, the very night. I think it was the TV airing of the deposition or something like that.
I don't recall specifically, but mm-hmm. The connection with what was going on in his personal scandals and the lack of any significant and realistic, reliable evidence that what he was bombing really was a legitimate target is overwhelming.
Well, and then that he came on TV and said, this is the beginning, this is the first salvo of America's war on terror. And I went on the air and said, it's probably the last. It's probably over because this was just a distraction.
Well, it certainly was over as far as his efforts to eradicate terrorism and extract a price for terrorist acts even then that have been committed against our country.
We have online Bob Barr, former congressman and author of the book, The Meaning of Is. Bob Barr, one of the things that I found out just shortly after the time of impeachment that I was so frustrated that was not brought up was the accusation by a former campaign supporter of Bill Clinton's, Juanita Broderick, that Bill Clinton had actually raped her in a hotel room in Little Rock, Arkansas. Did Did the managers of the House consider that evidence?
It was evidence that was included in great detail in the materials that Ken Starr sent up to the Hill that were available to us. I reviewed it. A number of other House managers reviewed it. Not one single senator was concerned enough about it to look at it. I don't recall if any Democrat House members looked at it. If they did, they were very, very few in number. By that time, most Republicans in our leadership had decided, with some exceptions, Tom DeLay being the exception, but most of our leaders had decided, you know, let's just get this thing over with as quickly and as narrowly focused as possible so we can say we've done something, give it to the Senate. We know they're not going to do anything, and we'll be done with it.
So that the credible accusation, the Wall Street Journal wrote this. They wrote that when you look at the contemporaneous witnesses and you interview them, that Bill Clinton raped Juanita Broderick is an event that in fact took place. That's how strong the Wall Street Journal, they didn't use the word alleged. That was Dorothy Rabinowitz wrote that column on their editorial pages. I believe she's one of their editorial editors. And she said that the rape of Juanita Broderick was an event that in fact took place. And so we were devastated to read that. And Bob Barr, let me just let you quickly know, I pastor a small church, Denver Bible Church. My wife, our family, our kids were middle-class Americans. We spent, mostly on credit cards, $110,000 in the following 5 or 6 weeks to organize protests in 145 U.S. cities, everywhere from Martha's Vineyard to San Diego, wherever Bill Clinton went. And then he went to New Zealand, to Auckland, New Zealand, and 10 Americans even went there with huge protests that Bill Clinton raped Juanita Broderick in a desperate effort to get history to remember, to get the media to deal with the credible accusation. And it was all our efforts were ignored.
Well, they may have been ignored, as was much of what I and others in the House tried to do. But ultimately, the one authority that truly matters, and that is God is our judge, will judge this. And history also, I think, will judge the work
yes.
that we did and the support of millions of Americans. Very, very positive.
We're almost out of time, but amen, Bob Barr, former congressman from Georgia, author of the book The Meaning of Is, on both those points. And by the way, Clinton's Presidential Library is opening November 14th to the 18th in Little Rock, Arkansas. And at Bob and Yart Live, we're headed there with a caravan, and we're going to renew our Clinton rapist protest there so that history has yet another footnote at the opening of his presidential library. We'll make quite an impact on that one city when we're there.
Well, I hope you do, and you did during the impeachment. The work that you all did at the grassroots level and the prayers were extremely important. We could not have done what we managed to do without that.
Well, thank you, Bob Barr. God bless you. Appreciate your time on the show. And the book is The Meaning of Is. You can pick that up at any bookstore, Amazon.com, online, BarnesandNoble.com. The Meaning of Is. Well, thank you all for tuning in. It's been a quick show. And I want to invite you out to Denver Bible Church this Sunday morning, Sunday night. We're having a great time. Sunday night, we're in the Book of Acts. The Book of Acts just started. I think you'll enjoy that. And on the web at KGOV, KGOV.com, that's our website. You can hear this show. Tell your friends. Call a friend across the country. Say, hey, you got to check out that interview with Bob Barr at KGOV.com.